Maximum Credible Accident by John Howlett, with Hugh Dixon as Gordon Allen and Patricia Gallimore as Kate. Part 1, Twisting the Dragon's Tail.
One little chip of ceramic, as large as a king-size cigarette, as small as a bullet. One little chip of ceramic. Someone dropped a molding during construction. The X-ray checks did not show up what was then only an invisible hairline fracture. But now, after 3 weeks of heat and pressure, the fracture has become a crack, visible to the naked eye. If naked eyes could penetrate 5 fail-safe shields of concrete and steel. 10, 9, 8. We live in the age of countdowns. 4, 3, 2, 1. It has broken away, unheard and unseen. A sliver of ceramic tossed in the molten sodium like a twig in a mountain stream. Drawn into the pump of whose shield it was a part. The pump digested easily enough, but the fragment is again distorted, crisscrossed now with tiny fractures, a multiple clot in the bloodstream, waiting on a longer countdown to do its real damage. The Emilio Segre fast breeder power station on the shore of the Mediterranean in Tuscany, built to a French design by a consortium of French and Italian engineers, and as yet only a name to civil servants far away in Whitehall.
This year, next year, sometime, never.
Why don't I clear this lot up?
File my piles of files. Good gracious, no, Janice. I'll never find anything ever again.
This is meant to be a conference table.
Got it. What number's the PPS?
213.
The time we waste on politicians.
Ashley.
Aylan here. I found a copy of our private report on the public inquiry. I'll have it sent down.
Oh, splendid. What about this Muff file?
Muff's not departmental. Muff's mine.
What on earth is Muff?
Materials unaccounted for.
What?
Nuclear jargon for wastage or lost property.
Ah.
My nickname for a file of nuclear case history, the bad history. The sort of rubbish the environmentalists keep turning out.
Oh.
Not for the vulnerable eyes and ears of politicians. Bye. Janice, will you please keep the Parliamentary Private Secretary off my back next time he calls? Put him on to Kate or one of the principals.
You're meant to be at that television place in 10 minutes' time. And have you fixed up with the American? He's on this afternoon's Concord.
Dig out graveyards and the Third World War. Don't let me go home this evening without doing them.
Kate G.
Kate, did you remember the American?
Oh, you bet I remember. I don't often have an afternoon out of the office. Do I get to take him out tonight at the taxpayer's expense?
You most certainly do not.
Oh. What am I allowed to talk to him about?
Anything except fast breeder reactors. What do you know about this TV film I'm meant to be viewing?
It's some sort of documentary reconstruction. The usual negative propaganda, I should think.
What you're about to see is a documentary reconstruction. The scenario is quite simple.
9 armed terrorists hijack a death train on its way from a fast breeder to the fuel processing plant at Windscale. The death train's carrying spent fuel in 2 coffins, all heavily contaminated stuff, strontium, krypton, plutonium and so on. Now, the terrorists park the 2 coffins on a viaduct in the middle of Glasgow and threaten to blow them up with a Carl Gustav.
Death trains and coffins? Your vocabulary is a little melodramatic, isn't it?
Oh, of course, your anti-nuke jargon. Well, naturally, you're quite at liberty to come onto the programme in your official capacities and debate the issue.
There is no issue. Your little fiction could never happen.
Shut up, George.
To all intents and purposes, it already has happened. Our programme is scripted from actual terrorist plans captured from a Red Brigade hideout in Turin. They have hijacked plans for every existing and projected nuclear power station in Europe.
And you want to give them free publicity?
Easy, George.
You
easy.
Must be out of your minds.
Taxi! Oh, Aylan, share a cab?
Delighted. Did you two have a chance to meet in there? Stick out a cautious paw, George. This is my correspondent from MOD.
Press Officer, Atomic Energy Authority. Hope you didn't believe a word of that bloody nonsense in there.
Everything with a pinch of salt.
Yeah. Well, I'm heading the other way. Make sure they're not allowed to transmit that rubbish, Gordon.
Where to, Chief?
Ministry of Defence, then on to Millbank.
Who's the American?
Undersecretary level, Minister.
Exploratory talks?
Not entirely.
I assume that fast breeders are non grata until the pirate inquiry is completed?
The inquiry is completed, Minister. We're merely waiting for the judge's report.
Which we cannot anticipate.
We should not anticipate, but time runs a little short in the face of congressional elections and a cold anti-nuclear wind blowing from California.
Their problem, not ours.
But it does put them under pressure, Minister. It's a good time to bargain with them. And that being so, I suggest that we proceed on the assumption that the inquiry report will be favourable.
I thought this American was only undersecretary level.
Yes, but he's their number one fast breeder man. And we happen to know he has a backup team briefed in the embassy. He can negotiate if we want to. We have to remember, Minister, that the government made a firm commitment to the building of a commercial fast breeder reactor long before the inquiry was set up.
My predecessor made a commitment.
Which was endorsed by the whole cabinet.
And which remains subject to the outcome of the Pyatt inquiry. Yeah, who is dealing with this American?
Gordon Aylan.
Graveyards in the Third World War.
Oh, yes.
You wanted to dictate minutes on them.
I'll put it on the machine. You can type them up on Monday morning. You'd better pack Muff and the big fast breeder file in my bag.
But they're classified. They're not meant to go out of the office.
I'm sure your filing cabinets won't tell tales.
And the way you're looking, you shouldn't be taking work home at all.
The seventh day, Janice, was not conceded to senior civil servants.
You'll catch a death of cold if you sit in here much longer.
Have a nice weekend.
Same to you.
Minutes to Kate and the PUS. Nuclear graveyard. The Institute of Geological Sciences has discovered a rock formation suitable for the burial of classified nuclear waste in the Cheviot Hills at a point where access would be possible from inside a military range. If the graveyard came under Men of Defense admin, it might be possible to keep its existence unknown to the general public. Comment. Kate, please find out who wrote this dangerous nonsense and remind the Institute of the likely consequences should this report ever find its way into the hands of our intrepid friends of the Earth. Aylan.
You haven't seen or heard the Secretary of State, have you, Gordon?
Good heavens, Ashley. This is the fifth floor, tribal hinterland. We haven't seen a Secretary of State up here in 10 years.
I've lost him. There's a division at the House in 10 minutes, and the opposition's withdrawn ministerial pairing. Typical Friday evening manoeuvre.
Try the security goons. They always know where he is. Yeah. Bye. Second minute for the Foreign Office and Minister of Defence. Third World War. International Atomic Energy Authority in Vienna is making slow but steady progress
obtaining international agreement that nuclear power stations should not be targets in the event of war. Comment. If hostilities can be put off for another 5 years, nuclear power plants might become the sole survivors of Armageddon, churning out megawatts for a non-existent world. Come in.
Sort.
Light switch on the left.
Permission to come aboard?
I'm sorry, Secretary of State. I wouldn't have barked if I'd known it was you. That's Janice's evening trap, I'm afraid. She always turns her light out when she goes home.
Probably to discourage people like me from disturbing you. I was trying to be democratic. I get fed up summoning people to my room with everyone knowing who I'm talking to and what we're talking about.
Your private office is looking for you.
Yes, a division. I'm walking to the house. Wondered if it was in your direction.
I'll just get my coat and bag.
Do you think these lifts are bugged?
I think all walls have ears in this building, Secretary of State.
I even have a special branch man tailing me around.
For your own protection, I hope.
He could be an assassin, for all I know. They work 8-hour shifts, so their faces change 3 times a day. It's most disconcerting. Is he following us?
In hot pursuit.
Well, at least he can't hear us. They disapprove if you don't move around in the official cars.
Not that you get very far in a car tonight.
Mm. Count the traffic on Lambeth Bridge.
6 double-decker buses?
7. Uh-huh. Plus 2 juggernauts and maybe 15 cars. Now, who's to say if we added 1 more bus, the bridge wouldn't fall down?
The engineers in County Hall, I hope, and the architects who built it.
And what if they'd done their sums wrong? You wouldn't know until the bridge fell down. And then it'd be too late.
Dr. Martin, I'm not in the mood for metaphysics.
Which way do you think the inquiry verdict will go?
I'm sure we'll be given the go-ahead to build a commercial fast breeder.
Which we all want to do, right?
Of course, Secretary of State. That's why we went to the trouble of holding a public inquiry.
I mean, we all believe fast breeders are the right thing to go for.
Nuclear power wouldn't make sense without the fast breeder. Conventional nuclear power stations can only burn 1% of available uranium. Fast breeders have the capacity to burn up the remaining 99%, most of which would otherwise be waste product. Yeah,
so they say. So they say. But how can we ever be certain that the experts know what they're talking about?
You were a doctor, Secretary of State. You have a better training there than me.
Yes, and I know that relative to what we could know in medicine, we actually know next to nothing at all.
Perhaps the equations in nuclear physics are more straightforward.
No, physics maybe, but not chemistry. You ask them what would happen if fast breeder fuel melted into liquid sodium at somewhere near its boiling point.
They're just about certain that any explosive reaction would be contained inside the reactor vessel.
Do you think just about certain is good enough?
Dr. Martin, this is not the time for second thoughts. Giant bloody marbles under my feet on a Friday evening.
My division bell. But the ball's in your court, Gordon. I'm asking you to ignore official government policy. I want you to even ignore our permanent secretary. Decision is yours to make. Be your own devil's advocate. It is not something over which we can afford to be wrong.
I thought we'd had enough devil's advocacy in the inquiry to last us all forever.
Experts and counter-experts. What I want is a human mind and a human voice underneath all this technical equation. Your briefcase is probably full of specifications and computer projections telling us that accidents can never happen.
Not that they can never happen, Secretary of State. That they will never happen.
Murphy's Law number 1, Gordon. If anything can go wrong, then sooner or later it will go wrong.
Oh, sorry, Mrs. Aylin. Have we got it turned up too high?
Oh, it's all right, Mick. Roxy! Hey,
you'll have to walk in front of him. He can't hear you. Hang on a minute.
Oh, hello, Mums.
Daddy's missed the train. He's on the 1:30.
Oh, hell, can't Joss pick him up?
No, Joss can't pick him up. He has homework to do.
Same damn tune, backwards and forwards all day.
You'll forgive them if they get it in the hit parade.
Oh, Joss, you gave me a fright.
Dad's not home yet?
No, he's on the half past.
Again?
Yes, that's how he sounded. Just about fed up.
When does a situation become a crisis? When, for that matter, does an incident become an accident? In the nuclear vocabulary, accidents are always incidents. Explosions are always excursions. Excursion, for God's sake. An excursion took place this morning at Hiroshima. 70,000 people are believed to have died. That's another one. No one's ever killed. They always die. As though there was something voluntary about the whole process. Come on out of my bag. Black muff. The good doctor said he wanted devil's advocacy.
Muff. Page 2, para 1. May the 21st, 1946. A Canadian physicist at Los Alamos is demonstrating how neutron activity builds up when two spheres of uranium-235 are gently eased towards each other. But one of the spheres slips, and the two chunks of uranium accidentally collide. The room fills with blue light. The physicist drags the spheres apart with his bare hands, saving the lives of his colleagues in the room. He himself dies of radiation sickness 9 days later. The physicist had previously nicknamed his demonstration Twisting the Dragon's Tail.
Che c'è? Leggi. 041, 039, 05.
What is happening?
Sound sensor. The reading jumps from 039 to 05.
Just one bleep?
Which sensor?
The number one, below the core.
What's the normal pattern?
Between 3.8 and 4.2.
Oh, more precisely, there is no normal pattern. It is an experimental instrument put there to define a normal pattern.
That's a fat lot of help.
What do I do, Enzo?
Are all other readings normal?
Yes.
Well, the French guru's here and he's not worried. Put a check on the instrument every 10 minutes and run off a record of the graph sheet.
Gordon?
Me!
Oh, can't you tell Mick to shut up for 5 minutes?
He will when he gets it right. It's the act of creation, Mums.
Is it? Where's Daddy?
Shutting the garage.
What are you looking for?
Ice. Da-da-da-da! Mr. Fast Breeder Reactor, UK.
Hello, girl.
It's wild, Mums. Dad can't even change a wheel on the car, and they give him the job of deciding national policy for nuclear reactors.
What are you doing with my milk jug?
Mixing martinis. Oh. Mick, come on down!
What's all this about Mr. Fast Reactor?
Dr. Martin having kittens. Sooner or later, every politician finds one decision impossible to make or take. The terror of making a historic boob.
How history does make cowards of them all. There you are, Dad, one cold and dry, dry martini.
At least you seem to have had a good day.
Ah, we have a beautiful song to sing.
And so.
Hello, Joss.
What's all this with the ice?
Celebration. Dad's just been made a de facto member of the cabinet.
Joss, don't put those boots by the food.
Have I got clean togs?
In the boiler room.
Are you playing a match tomorrow?
Harrow.
Ah, Harrow.
I quite fancy seeing that.
I thought we had your American guest.
We'll take him as well. Good way to kill an afternoon's entertaining. Hello, girl. I haven't kissed you yet.
You look as tired as you sounded on the phone.
Fast breeding responsibilities, Mums.
Why, is the report out?
I wish it was.
You know what Tinfin said at school yesterday? He called the fast breeder the economic miracle of the 21st century.
Thank the Lord for Tinfin. He should be sent on the night train to Durham.
They mine coal in Durham, Dad, not uranium.
I refer to Dr. Martin, MP, who on a Friday evening will, if they drag themselves out of their debate in the House of Commons, catch the sleeper home to his wife, family and constituency.
Well, why does he need Tinfin? Is he losing his nerve?
Dr. Martin is, in a manner of speaking, picking fast breeder fluff from the government's naval. Has Kate called?
Kate? No. Don't be long. Supper's on the table. If Mick wants to eat, Roxy, you'd better call him again.
Mick? Eat? Mick doesn't eat. Mick never eats. Mick stirs food into a brown pudding and drinks it.
Evening, Mr. Aylam.
Hello, Mick. Blue-eyed Mick. His doped-up, lazy smile. Is it dope, they call it? Smells like sweet corruption, halfway between sex and incense.
Hello?
Hello, Kate. It's Gordon. Sorry to ring you at home.
I was going to call you at 9 o'clock.
Oh, does that mean you're watching something on the box?
I'm eating peanut butter and drinking vodka.
Is that the effect the American had on you?
The effect my boyfriend has on me.
What's he like?
The boyfriend?
The American.
An excess of energy and dedication. I had to take him shopping in Carnaby Street. That was even before I got him to his hotel. He kept the cab waiting 20 minutes. Presents for his wife and daughter.
Is he coming down here?
Afraid so. I said you'd meet him off the 11:30 train.
Thanks, Kate. See you Monday.
Good luck.
Page 4, para 2. January the 3rd, 1961. The National Reactor Testing Station near the Idaho Falls. The plant shuts down for maintenance, which includes the easing up and down of a control rod that has a tendency to stick. Unfortunately, the 3 servicemen carrying out the maintenance have not been told that the fuel inside the core is more than usually reactive. The moment they ease the faulty control rod out of the core, the chain reaction starts up again, and in less than 1/100th of a second, the whole core has gone supercritical. The excursion lifts the reactor vessel 15 feet through its concrete shield. One of the servicemen is impaled to the roof by a control rod plug. The second man is killed instantly by the blast. The third is dragged out by heroic rescue workers who ignore the dangerous levels of radioactivity. The third man dies before he reaches hospital. Eventually, the 2 bodies inside are recovered by remote control and all 3 victims buried in sealed lead coffins inside a specially constructed lead-lined vault. So lethal is the radioactivity in their bodies.
Early days, Muff. That was 20 years ago.
Page 10, October the 5th, 1966. The China Syndrome.
No, not tonight. I've had enough. There's no road to Damascus here. The ghost of a murdered girl beckons Lucia from the Lammermoor Fountain. And the phantom fast breeders beckon us from an unknown horizon.
You still up?
Where's everyone else?
Going to bed.
So should you, if you're playing rugger tomorrow.
There's some cocoa in the kitchen.
Good night, Mr. Aylan.
Good night, Mick. Better not say sleep well, since you're probably sharing body and bed with my son. Boy, wouldn't the tabloids love it. Atom Mandarin keeps gay drug hostel. Well, what if Roxy does slip into Mick's bed after lights out? Isn't that meant to be in some way the fault of the father? My own inadequacy somewhere along the line. Even that interpretation makes it sound like an aberration, which we are severely told it is not. Perhaps the only aberration is our own inability to talk with one another about it. A carefully avoided subject in the home.
Dad? She wanted sweeter. Coco.
Well, that's fine.
Getting through to you, is it?
What?
Fast breeders. Not having second thoughts.
Good heavens, no.
Good night, Dad.
Good night, Joss.
E cosa facciamo?
Cancellare.
You want to call up the plant manager?
10 to midnight on a Friday evening? He'd murder us. Check all the readings and run off a copy of the graph sheet. Sing out the number one.
3.9, 4.1, 3.9, 4. That's regular.
That's the pulse of the four pumps.
Then it jumps to 5.
Control room?
Night shift or quiescent, I'm correct.
Give us 2 minutes, Petrol. We have a situation.
So, what is acoustic 5? Fault on the instrument, maybe?
Experimental instrumentation. That's what the French will tell us.
So what do we do?
Brief the incoming shift, log it in the book, and go home to bed.
You wouldn't be saying that if the construction boys weren't still around.
This reactor is running in, my friend. It's still in the hands of the men who designed it. Let them make the decisions if they insist. All we can do is watch and hope to learn. Okay, let's hand her over. Bring in your men, Patron. Midnight approaches.
One hard little chip of ceramic, as small as a bullet, invisible to the men in the Segre control room, unintelligible on the sound sensor, surely too insignificant to cause real damage to such a sophisticated piece of technology.
In part one of Maximum Credible Accident by John Howlett, Gordon Aylan was played by Hugh Dixon, Kate by Patricia Gallimore, and the voice of Muff by Hayden Jones. Dr. Martin, Michael N. Harbour, the permanent undersecretary, Anthony Benson, Mary, Patricia Gibson, Roxy, Kim Durham, Joss, Kerry Shale, and Ashley, Graham Padden. Ensor, Terry Malloy, Janice, Hedley Nicklow, Mick, David Van, and the Defense Undersecretary, Terry Coates. The theme music was composed by Robert Campbell and Michael Shepherd. The serial was directed in our Birmingham studios by Roger Pine.